Chapter 3. Santiago Jilia Singh. Singh felt a tingle on his wrist and slid back his sleeve. The monitor wrapped around his forearm saw him look and displayed a notification of his most urgent task, the upcoming audience with the High Consul. He reset the notification timer to 1/2 hour before the meeting itself. His data pad had been riding on his arm or in his pocket for nearly 5 years. It knew everything there was to know about him. It was treating his upcoming audience with the High Consul as if it were the single most important event of his life. It wasn't wrong. He pulled the sleeve back into place, giving it one sharp tug to smooth out any new wrinkles, and inspected himself in his mirror. His blue and white dress uniform fit him like a glove, emphasizing the muscular frame he spent an hour every day sculpting in the gym. The newly acquired Captain Stars glittered on his collar, polished to a golden gleam. His chin and scalp were freshly shaved, and he imagined it gave him the feral, predatory quality that befit a military man. "Still preening?" Natalia said from the bathroom. She opened the door and came out in a cloud of steam, her hair dripping wet. "A man so handsome needs to be groped, I think." "No," Singh said, backing away. "If you get water on me..." "Too late," his wife laughed, darting forward to grab him. She hugged him tight around the waist, her wet hair on his shoulder. "Nat," he said, meaning to complain, but finding himself unable to. Her towel had come loose when she grabbed him, and in the mirror he could see the gentle curve of her hip. He put a hand on it and squeezed. "I'm all wet now."
"You'll dry," she said, reaching behind him to pinch his butt.
The newly promoted captain in the Laconian Navy gave an undignified yelp. He felt another buzz in his wrist, and for a moment, Singh thought the pad on his arm was disapproving of all this tomfoolery. He pushed his sleeve back again and saw that it was just a notification that his car would arrive in 20 minutes. "Car will be here soon," he said with regret, burying his nose in his wife's wet hair for a moment. "And it's time to get Elsa up," Natalia agreed. "It's your big day. You pick. Wake the monster or make breakfast?"
"I'll take monster duty this morning."
"Be careful. She'll care even less about not messing up your clean new uniform," Natalia said as she pulled on a robe.
"Breakfast in 10, sailor." But it took nearly 15 minutes to drag Elsa out of her crib, change her diaper, get her dressed, and carry her into their kitchen. Natalia had already put plates piled high with pancakes and fresh apples on the table, and the smell of chai filled the air. Singh's wrist buzzed, and he didn't need to look to know it was the 5-minute warning for his car. He strapped Elsa into her high chair and put the smallest plate of apple slices in front of her. She chortled and smacked her palm down onto them, spraying droplets of juice everywhere.
"Will you have time to eat?" Natalia asked.
"I'm afraid I won't," Singh said, pulling up his sleeve and scrolling through the day's schedule. "Monster just did not want to put pants on today.
I think her single biggest disagreement with preschool is their pants requirement," Natalia said with a smile. Then she glanced down at the meeting schedule on his arm and sobered.
"What time should we expect you?"
"My meeting is scheduled for 15 minutes at 9 a.m., and I don't have anything else today, so," Singh said. He did not say, "But I'm meeting with High Consul Winston Duarte, so I control nothing about when the meeting begins or ends."
"All right," Natalia said, then kissed his cheek. "I'll be at the lab today until at least 6, but your father agreed to monster duty if you can't pick her up from school."
"Fine, fine," Singh said. "Until then."
The dark naval staff car pulled up outside.
Singh paused at the mirror by the door to give himself one final inspection and wipe away an errant bit of monster's breakfast shrapnel. Natalia was at the table now, trying to eat and also get some of Monster's own food in her mouth and off her shirt. Dread welled up from his belly, swamping his heart. He had to swallow half a dozen times before he could speak. He loved his wife and their child more than he could say, and leaving them was always a little difficult. This was different. Generations of Navy men had faced mornings like this, meetings with superiors that heralded change. Surely if they'd faced it, he could too. The imperial view, a history professor at the Naval Academy once said, is the long view. Individuals build empires because they want their names to echo through time. They build massive constructs of stone and steel so that their descendants will remember the people who created the world that they only live in. There were buildings on Earth that were thousands of years old. Sometimes the only remaining evidence of empires that thought they would last forever. Hubris, the professor had called it. When people build, they are trying to make an aspiration physical. When they die, their intentions are buried with them. All that's left is the building. While Martian intentions had never been explicitly imperialist, they had a fair bit of this same hubris. They'd built their tunnels and warrens as temporary living space in the stone of Mars, then gotten down to the generations-spanning work of making the surface habitable. But their first generation died with the work still unaccomplished, and the generation after that, and so on, children following parent, until the children only knew the tunnels and didn't think they were so bad. They lost sight of the larger dream because it had never been their dream. Once the creators and their intentions were gone, only the tunnels were left. As Singh looked out at the capital city of Laconia whizzing past the car's window, he saw the same masses of material and intention. Giant stone and steel buildings designed to house the government of an empire that didn't exist yet. More infrastructure than Laconia on its own would need for centuries. Their columns and spires called back millennia of Terran and Martian culture, and remade them as a vision of a peculiarly human future. If the dreams of empire failed, they'd just be big buildings that had never been used. It was an open secret among the high-ranking officers of Laconia's military that the High Council's labs had made incredible breakthroughs in human modification. One of their most important projects was dramatic life extension for the High Council himself. The captain that Singh had served under as a lieutenant had received an official reprimand for getting drunk and referring to the High Council as our own little god-king. But Singh understood why that particular project for the High Council was so important. Empires, like buildings, are aspirations made material. When the creator dies, the intention is lost. And so, the creator couldn't be permitted to die. If the rumors were true, and the High Council's scientists were in fact working to make him deathless, they had a chance to create the sort of empire history had only dreamed of. Stability of leadership, continuity of purpose, and a single, lasting vision. Which was all well and good, but didn't explain why he had been summoned to a personal meeting with Duarte. "We're almost there, sir," his driver said. "I'm ready," Singh lied. The state building of Laconia was the Imperial Palace in all but name. It was by far the largest structure in the capital city. It was both the seat of their government and the personal dwelling space of the High Consul and his daughter. After passing through a rigorous security screening administered by soldiers in state-of-the-art Laconian power armor, Singh was finally ushered inside for the very first time. It was a little disappointing. He wasn't sure what he'd expected. A ceiling 50 feet high, maybe, held up by rows of massive stone pillars. A red velvet carpet leading to a towering golden throne. Ministers and servants lining up for a word with the High Consul and plotting intrigues and whispers. Instead, there was a foyer and waiting area lined with comfortable chairs, easy access to restrooms, and a wall monitor displaying the security rules inside the state building. It all seemed very mundane, very governmental. A short, smiling man with a red jacket and black pants entered through the room's largest door and gave an almost imperceptible bow. "Captain Santiago Singh," he said, not making it a question. Singh stood up, only barely stopping himself from snapping out a salute. The man didn't wear a military uniform or any rank insignia, but they were inside the home of their ruler. It carried a weight beyond protocol. "Yes, sir. I am Captain Singh. The High Consul hopes you will join him in the residence for breakfast," the little man said. "It would be my honor, of course." "Follow me," said the little man as he exited through the same large door. Singh followed. If the foyer of the state building was underwhelming, the rest of the interior was positively utilitarian. Corridors lined with office space radiated off in every direction. The halls bustled with activity, people in suits and military uniforms, and the same red jackets and black pants as his guide moving about. Singh made sure to salute any time he saw a rank that required it, and tried to ignore everyone else. The whole human population of Laconia were the original colonists, Duarte's fleet, and the children born there in the last few decades. He hadn't imagined there were this many people on the planet he hadn't met. His little guide moved through as though he didn't see any of them, and kept his same vague smile the entire time. After a 10-minute walk through a maze of corridors and chambers, they arrived at a set of glass double doors that looked out on a large patio. His guide opened one door and ushered him through, then disappeared back into the building. "Captain Singh," High Consul Winston Duarte, absolute military ruler of Laconia, called out, "please join me. Kelly, make sure the captain has a plate." Another man in a red jacket and black pants, this one apparently named Kelly, set a place for him, then pulled out his chair. Singh sat, dizzy and grateful he wouldn't have to try to keep from swaying on his feet. "High Consul, I..." Singh started, but Duarte waved him off. "Thank you for joining me this morning, and I think we can use our military titles here. Admiral Duarte, or just Admiral, is fine." "Of course, Admiral." Kelly had placed a single egg and an egg cup in front of him, and was now using tongs to put a sweet roll next to it on his plate. Singh had eaten an egg before, so while it was a luxury, it wasn't a total mystery. The table was small. It would have been crowded with four diners, and overlooked a large patch of what looked like lovingly tended terrestrial grass. A girl of maybe 12 years sat in the middle of the grass playing with a puppy. Real chickens and Terran dogs. Unlike Noah's Ark and the old story, the ships of the First Fleet had carried only a few species of animal to Laconia. Seeing evidence of two in the same sitting was a little overwhelming. Singh tapped on the shell of his egg with his spoon to crack it, and tried to keep his bearings. Admiral Duarte gestured at Singh's coffee cup, and Kelly poured for him. "I apologize," Duarte said, for pulling you away from your family so early this morning.
I serve at the pleasure of the High Council, Singh said automatically.
Yes, yes, the Admiral replied. Natalia, right? And one daughter?
Yes, Admiral, Elsa. She's nearly two now.
Admiral Duarte smiled out at the girl in the grass and nodded.
It's a good age. Not the toilet training part, but she's sleeping through the night?
Most nights, sir.
It's fascinating to watch their minds start to grow around then. Learning language, learning to identify themselves as a separate entity. The word no becomes magical.
Yes, sir, Singh said.
Don't pass up trying that pastry, the Admiral said. Our baker's a genius.
Singh nodded and took a bite. The pastry was too sweet for him, but the bitter black coffee paired with it perfectly. Admiral Duarte smiled at him, then said,
Tell me about Captain Iwasa.
The bite of sweet roll he'd just swallowed turned into a slug of lead in his belly. Captain Iwasa had been stripped of rank and dishonorably discharged based on a report Singh had given to the Admiralty. If his former commanding officer had been a personal friend of the High Council, Singh could be witnessing the end of his career. Or worse.
I'm sorry, Singh started. It's not an interrogation, Duarte said, his voice as soft as warm flannel. I know all the facts about Captain Iwasa. I want to hear your version. You filed the original dereliction of duty report. What moved you to do that?
One of his professors at the military academy had once said, When there's no cover, the only sensible thing to do is move through the field of fire as quickly as possible. Singh sat up straight in his chair, doing his best version of standing at attention from the sitting position.
Sir, yes, sir. Captain Iwasa failed to enforce the newly delivered Naval Code of Military Conduct, and then when asked a direct question about those guidelines, he lied to Admiral Goyer, his commanding officer, in my presence. I sent a memo to Admiral Goyer that disputed Captain Iwasa's statements.
Duarte eyed him speculatively, no hint of anger on his face. That didn't mean anything. From all accounts, the High Consul was not a demonstrative man.
The revised code that made dereliction of duty an offense punishable by being sent to the pen?
Admiral Duarte said.
Yes, sir. Captain Iwasa felt this punishment to be excessive and spoke openly about it. When two Marines were found sleeping on duty, he gave them administrative punishments instead.
So, you went over his head to Admiral Goyer.
Sir, no, sir, Singh said. He lowered his eyes to look directly into the High Consul's. I witnessed an officer lying to his superior in response to a direct question about his chain of command. I notified that officer, as was my duty.
Singh stopped, but Duarte said nothing. Just kept looking at him like he was a particularly interesting bug pinned to a corkboard. Then, as if it were a casual question, Did you dislike Iwasa?
If I may speak frankly, sir, Singh asked.
When Duarte nodded, he continued. Operating within the code of military conduct is the sworn duty of every officer and enlisted man. It is the instrument by which we are a military, and not just a lot of people with spaceships and guns. When an officer shows a disregard for it, they are no longer an officer. When Iwasa demonstrated a repeated and deliberate failure to uphold that code, he was no longer my commanding officer. I merely informed the next person up the chain of command of this fact.
Do you feel now, knowing what the consequences to Iwasa were, that you did the right thing?
The Admiral asked. His face and voice betrayed no opinion on the topic. He might as well have been asking if Singh wanted sugar.
Yes, Admiral, Singh said.
Duty isn't a buffet where you pick what you want and ignore the rest. Provisional loyalty isn't loyalty. Captain Iwasa's duty was to enforce the code of conduct on those in his command. When he lied about failing to do so, it was my duty to notify his commanding officer. The High Consul nodded. It could have meant anything. Do you miss him? I do. He was my first commanding officer when I left the academy. He taught me everything I needed to know. I miss him every day, Singh replied, and realized he wasn't exaggerating. Iwasa's fatal flaw had turned out to be his affection for those in his command. It made him an easy man to love. Captain, Duarte said, I have a new assignment for you. Singh stood up, nearly knocking his chair over, and saluted. Captain Santiago Singh reporting for duty, High Consul. He knew it was ridiculous, but something about the entire conversation was surreal and ridiculous, and in the moment it just felt like the right thing to do. Duarte had the grace to treat it with respect. The first phase of our project is coming to an end. We are now moving on to phase two. I am giving you command of the Gathering Storm. The details of your orders are in the captain's safe on that vessel. Thank you, Admiral, Singh said, his heart pounding in his chest. It will be my honor to carry those orders out to the letter. Duarte turned to look out at the girl playing with her dog. We've been hidden away from the rest of humanity long enough. Time we showed them what we've been doing.